DeskOfProds.com anime podcast. It's probably going to be a short one, because we are no longer having battles. Eh, well. As always, this podcast is brought to you by a fuck ton of sponsors, but today is brought to you by Kobo eBooks. Made by the people at Chapters and Indigo, Kobo is an e-reader, which is actually pretty good. My mom has one. It's pretty easy to use. Click the link at the bottom of the page and go get yourself some Kobo eBooks. You can get the Millennium Trilogy, or if you're more fantasy, you got Game of Thrones there for like $20 for all books. So it's a pretty good deal. Like I said, link at the bottom of the page. Buy some stuff. Support some awesome people. Speaking of supporting awesome people, well, actually, the exact antithesis of supporting awesome people. Support us! Go to deathstoreprods.com/store. We got shirts, we got hoodies, and Bovi just introduced our new zip-up hoodie. So we got that on there now. And until March 17th, you said it was, or 18th?
18th.
March 18th, if you spend over $50, you get $10 off. So that's awesome. Like I said, deathstoreprods.com/store.
Yeah, it's March 18th because I guess the people at Spreadshirt figure you'll be way too smashed on the 17th to actually purchase any of our stuff.
Yeah. I doubt you'd be able to use a computer when you're on March 17th. So if you just want to give us money, go to deathstoreprods.com/indiegogo. All funds raised will be going toward helping the site a better place. We'll be using it to get better mics, better equipment like capture cards and stuff, so we can do more Let's Plays and better Let's Plays. And, yeah. So, desktopprods.com/indiegogo. That is I-N-D-I-E-gogo. And, yeah. I guess I should probably run down the prizes for this one, too. So, if you donate at least $1, you get a shout-out and you get a Give Us Topic or Anything cast, which is our random podcast. If you donate $15, you get the shout-out, the Anything cast, and you get to choose a commentary month for us to do. If you donate $40, then you get the shout-out, the Anything cast, the commentary month, and we give you control of the podcast. You come on, you host it, you lead the discussion anywhere you want it to go. And, yeah, you can essentially just make us your dancing monkeys.
Yay, dancing monkeys.
Yes, but unfortunately, you need to provide the symbols for us. So yeah, like I said, that's deathrowprods.com/indiegogo. Donate some money and help us out, please. As always, I'm your host, the Dead Man, and I am very tired. Join me today, as always, we have Bovion.
Now with more glasses.
And Petatron.
Hello. I'm also very tired.
Yeah, you know you're tired when you almost run yourself off the road.
Yeah,
I was driving into school and I was literally 5 minutes out from the parking lot of my school. I was just like, I just like drove my car into the curb.
Good job.
Needless to say, that woke me up a bit. I was like, that I'm awake. Okay. Yeah, so we're gonna talk about some anime and manga. So I guess let's start with the big three. So, Naruto. The past few chapters, previous chapter, I guess, Sasuke ran into Itachi, and they talked, and then most recently, we had Tsunade and, to a lesser extent, the other Kages versus Madara, and Itachi reaches Kabuto. So, yeah.
He certainly did.
Yeah, he did. So, yeah.
So, Sasuke and Itachi didn't fight.
No, I think Sasuke tried to like grab him with Susanoo, and Itachi blocked it.
They had a quick conversation. Itachi didn't really stop.
Yeah,
they noticed each other, and Itachi didn't stop. And then Sasuke's like, "Wait a minute, the way he phrases it in the, and at least the translation I read was a little impersonal, though, for talking to his dead brother.
It's like you're Itachi, right?
Yeah, it's like, hey, you're that guy.
It's like, you've known him all your life, your entire being is centered around this guy. You should probably be able to recognize him at first glance.
Yeah.
It just was weird, but yeah, we got to see Tsunade fighting, which is awesome.
Yep.
So yeah, there's that. Yeah, we are really tired.
And they attempted to seal him, and oh no, it was a clone.
A Susanoo clone, which I didn't know they could do that.
Well, I'm sure somebody at that Madara's level can make shit up as much as he likes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, everyone is doing that. Like, every single technique they have is just, like, what do they have on hand and what do you need? Just like, alright, I need a clone. What do I have? Oh, some sand. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if at some point someone made a clone out of air. Like, not shadows or anything, just like, you know, it's bright day, there's nothing anywhere, they just, it's like, do some hand signs, then just, the air turns into people.
Yeah, well, they don't have an elemental power for air.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have wind.
I guess, yeah.
Okay, so.
Maybe Naruto will make it up.
Yeah, who knows?
He's a wind type user.
Yeah. You know, when he's not figuring out how to throw it at stuff. Ooh, yep. Or maybe he'll actually make air clones, then make them into air shuriken.
Yeah, basically.
Like, just like throw himself at the enemy. So just like so just like flying out of Databayo, then turns to a shuriken.
Yeah, it's like it's the full thing again, or turns himself into a shuriken and gets his clone to throw him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like against Zabuza.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Pop appears, turns back to normal behind him, and hi-yah.
And Databayo.
And what for, yeah.
Okay, so, Bovan, you read the chapters for Naruto?
No.
Okay. So moving on to Bleach. So we have the declaration of war, and yeah, and that dude with the face and the thing tried to steal Ichigo's Bankai, but apparently he can't.
Yeah, what an idiot.
It's like, oh, you tried to steal his Bankai, did you?
Yeah, you can't really absorb that much awesome.
Yeah, and we also got to see inside the headquarters of the evil people.
The Vagabond, something German sounding.
Yes. The essentially Quincy's.
Yes. I suspect they're somewhat sort of hybrid splinter faction of something. Mm-hmm. That has to do with the Quincy's and something else.
Maybe Aaron Carr became Quincy's.
Maybe, yeah.
Because you know that guy with the face.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they introduced the other guy, like, what was on his face? Did he have, like, spacers in his... Did he have, like, spacers going across his face?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was, like, the, tribal things that some clans have in Africa.
Did he turn his head into an ocarina?
Like, they put...
Maybe they all just have a really bad development, or a really strange development of bone cancer.
They just have terrible complexion.
Just horrible.
Acne in a weird formation.
Oh god, I am just reminded of something I saw on Reddit. With that, and I'm about to throw up because of it.
Did somebody trick you into going to looking up blue waffles?
No, not that. It was on what the fuck? It was on the W2F. It was on the WTF part, and it was marked NSFL.
No.
Yeah, it was called Holes.
Oh, yeah. That sounds promising, especially with the label of not safe for life.
That's
what the L means.
Yeah, it had it in parentheses. It was like NSFW, and it's like M in parentheses, and NSFL. So, I didn't know what that meant, so I looked at it. It haunted me. It still does to this very day.
Yeah, that's what the internet does.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so moving off disgusting shit.
But yeah, I suspect that they have some sort of canceling ability for Bankai or something. Maybe it's just the one guy, and Ichigo is for some reason immune.
But like that, like Genryu Yusai's man bitch. He did say that they can use Bankai.
Yeah. Which I don't know.
It's bizarre because they don't really have things to Bankai.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Quincy do have some sort of Bankai thing.
So they Bankai their bracelets.
Yeah, it's like they have the full spirit thing, which is sort of their normal weapon, their spirit bow, which isn't actually a physical thing, it's just the spirit particles, you know, like when you first saw Ryu with his.
Yeah, I know.
Just the thing,
yep.
And then it actually turns into a physical thing, and that's kind of like Shikai, I guess. And, except it's more permanent than like a normal Shikai, than a Shinigami Shikai, I should say. And then they can upgrade it for limited amounts of time. Like a Bankai kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It probably wouldn't be called Bankai, because...
No, they feel the need to rename everything.
Grr, racial envy.
Yeah, like, they call Shinpo something else.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what to fucking call that.
Yeah, it's a Shinpo. It's...
Yeah. It's like, you can move very far distance with a single step. Guess what, that's Shinpo. No, it's not. It's something German.
Considering the fact that pretty much translates to flash step, it makes sense as Shinpo. Oh, yeah, the whole German thing.
Yeah. Okay. So, anything else you guys want to talk about with Bleach?
Nothing right now. My memory is actually relatively fuzzy on the new chapters-ish.
You know what? I'm going to say this right out. This new arc is not holding my attention like any of the previous ones did.
Yeah, it was kind of off to a slow burn. It's really just like, hey, we got this new guy. He doesn't really do shit.
The scene when after the guy shows up is kind of funny, though.
Yeah,
when
bit.
He first stands on the bed and, like...
Ichigo just kicks him out the window.
Ichigo just kicks him out the window and Shinigami's up to go after him. And it's like, you guys just stay here. Or something to that effect. Like, I'm going out. And, like, Chad, Uryu, and Orihime are just sitting in his room eating bread. And they're like, cool, we'll just finish these off.
Yeah.
As he, like... There's no reason for them to be worried whatsoever about his safety anymore.
It's like, you're good.
They're cool. We'll be here. Yeah. And they're all stuffing their faces, and it's funny.
We'll save you some bread.
Pretty much. I think they say exactly that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I guess...
Sorry.
Well, Bobby, what specifically about this arc isn't really holding your attention?
I don't know. It's paced kind of differently. Like, it's almost like they're trying to pace it faster, like having the villain show up and attack right away. But I don't know. The pacing is just weird, and it doesn't have me waiting for the next big thing like everything else does, you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, with the previous things, this is, like, usually the arcs have started out with, you know, Ichigo somehow, like, Ichigo getting another new power. Like, that's usually the thing, like, at the beginning of the thing, he got the power in the first place, and then he moved on and got Bankai, then he moved on and got his mask. And so, like, every single time it's been him getting progressively more powerful. But now, like, he's almost a god, essentially, so you can't really get much more powerful than that.
Well, he could go back to full form.
Yeah, true.
Or final form.
Yeah that's part of the reason I'm not so sure about how this will work, because, I mean, if all else fails, I'm like, oh no, final gets again.
Yeah.
And wipes everybody out.
Yeah, like, or he'll, like, find someone else who can do that, who could, like, do the best Lord A transformation, and then teach him how to do that, and then he just does that, and final gets again.
Yeah, he's gonna go full hollow this time.
Yeah.
And, like, consciously do it.
Yeah. Or it's actually going to, like, full hollow, lose control, like, actually turn into a hollow, lose control, and then Orihime is going to do some bullshit and bring him back.
I guess my issue is, as much as it's annoying when all of his new powers seem to be useless, it's kind of boring when there's no sense of danger.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really know anything about these guys. Like, the previous guys we knew something about. Like we knew they were powerful. But these guys were just like, hey, we have masks.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Ish. We've got, like, eye patches.
We have something that looks like we stole it from the Red Hood. And stupid waiter hats. But yeah, it's weird. Well, this is going to be the last arc, so I'm assuming it's going to get crazier.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is going to be, you know, a longer arc than normal, but... Because, you know, you don't go out with a toot.
Yeah.
A bang that you want.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess those were Bleach. Moving on to One Piece. They're still in the middle of their introducing what the hell's happening. And so far we have giant children, a samurai who is currently in three parts, his head, his torso, and his legs, and this horrible island where two admirals were, like, some of the most powerful people, had an argument, which left one half of it perpetually on fire, one half perpetually frozen, is the vacation home of a pirate.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, it'd be nice if we had someone else on here who actually read One Piece or anything, so I could actually talk to them about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I could just never get behind it. Oh. Honestly. It is too bland of, like, shonen fare. For me, anyway.
How do you mean?
Like it just kind of gets repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I mean, not that, like, Bleach and Naruto aren't kind of repetitive in the way, but
mm-hmm.
I put up with them because I actually enjoy the art.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have trouble looking at One Piece for some reason.
It's a bit too cartoony.
Fairy Tail doesn't bother me.
Mm. Yeah.
Neither does Sangekun to Meganation, which is the same guy who did, which is the assistant to the person who did Fairy Tail.
One Piece is kind of more cartoony, I think, than Fairy Tail.
Yeah, I find I put a lot of weight in what a manga looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll read practically anything. I read shoujo every once in a while, and jose and that kind of stuff, because for the most part it's well written stuff, but I mean, just sometimes the art just puts my teeth on edge.
Yeah.
And most of it is like that, actually.
I think I've only ever read one Jose series. Yeah, it was 07 Ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For the longest time, I had no idea that was Jose.
Yeah, you get that a lot. Especially with, like, Seinen and Jose.
Yeah. You
generally can't tell them apart a whole lot without foreknowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the art has never really bothered me in One Piece. Like, it kind of fits the story, because, like, the main character is essentially a retard made of rubber.
Yeah, I'm...
And it kind of plays with that. But, like, as the series has gone on, the art has gotten a bit more serious. Like, at the beginning of it, it was like, oh, I'm going to punch this clown into space, but now it's like, oh, there's this guy who's made of sand with a giant hook for him who stabs me through the chest and drains me of all my bodily fluids.
Yeah. It's just... Can't really change the character models significantly, though, which is...
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they suddenly transitioned into, you know, Bleach's art style,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't really do that, but...
Yeah, well, they didn't really do that, it's like...
I know, it's just like, I just find it hard to take that art style seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't get my there's no emotional weight behind a situation.
Yeah, like,
oh no, somebody's died. It just doesn't fit for me.
Yeah, but like I said, like as the series goes on, the art does get a bit more serious, so it does end up like contributing the emotional weight of stuff, because there have been things that have almost brought me to tears in One Piece. And some of it's been really one day, like when they had to leave their ship to get a new ship, that was fucking heartbreaking. Because it turned out their ship was alive, even though it was made of wood.
Wood's alive.
Well, this was wood taken from tree, so it was killed, so it was murdered wood. It was like really good. It was just like everyone's crying, and there's like they shut the ship on fire. Everyone starts crying. All of a sudden, it starts snowing, and the ship starts talking to them, saying how great it was to be able to travel with them for so long. Yeah, it was really good. So, you know, if you can get past the first little bit, if you get past the first arc, then the art style does get better, and it starts getting a bit more into the more serious shonen stare territory. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So, One Piece, Giants and Bears, and Samurai, oh my. Yeah, so that does it for Big 3. Moving on to what we've read and watched. So, Pudge.
Alright. So, let's start off with, frankly, the one I think I'm going to describe the worst by far. it's called Break Blade. There's a movie. Yeah, there was a 6-part anime movie that was sort of released in, like, 1-hour parts. Mm-hmm. That was, I forget when the last part was released, but it wasn't too long ago, I don't think. But basically, gist of it is, it's set on the continent of Kruzon, where everybody is born with a certain degree of magic. Most of that magic goes towards manipulating quartz, which is quite literally like quartz, from what I understand. I mean, there might be different properties and such. But, you know, from levitating crystals to changing its shape into whatever it's needed, like teacups or, like, golems and stuff. And that's how the military basically works, is they use giant golems made of quartz that people drive and they shoot. And they use, like, railgun technology, which is really cool. Hmm. Because they can't really do the combustion thing.
Wait, what do you mean railgun?
It's not magnets and stuff, but they just propel. They have a gun-looking thing, and they propel large rods of quartz out of the gun using the magic.
And basically building up pressure on it is how that works, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I digress. The main character, Rygart Arrow, is a rare exception. He can't use magic at all. It's extremely rare to come by, but it's not so rare that it is like, that's never happened before. But it is, it's rare for it to be odd. Now, he's, you know, standard weirdo thing. He's shunned by a lot of people, but anything that runs on quartz, which is mostly everything in the world, he can't really use. So he uses, you know, ancient tools and stuff to get his work done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did well at a military academy, but due to the lack of funding that he had personally to finish, he dropped out and went back to live as a farmer with his also non-magical brother. Now, one day he summoned to Benonten, the capital of Krishna, which is a country on it, and he's reunited with Queen Sigyn and King Hodor. They're both friends from the military academy. And, you know, fills him in the country. There's the nation of Athens is coming in to attack, basically. And he takes Raggart to a mine where an ancient golem was discovered, encased in quartz. So the golem has been researched and everything, and then there's a bit of a thing, and like, what do you want me to do? Kind of situation at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And
so does it turn out he's the chosen one who has a mystical power no one knew about?
Well, not so much. The research site, the excavation site, is attacked by a small, like, strike force of Athenian golems. And during the attack, he gets knocked off the scaffolding and luckily falls into the golem, which then turns on, despite him not having any magic and them not being able to do anything about, like, activating it before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he still has no magic or anything. It's just this golem, for some reason, responds to him. And it's... I like it. I like this one a lot, mainly because it's basically all gray area.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have no idea, like, the motivation, a lot of the motivations behind the people in each thing. And it turns out one of his... another one of his best friends from the military academy, Zess, is leading that elite squad that attacked. So there's, you know... and neither of them really want to fight each other. There's a lot of gray area, like, what should we do kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a very issue-riddled show.
It sounds like, from, like, the description, it sounds like it's like kind of a mech show.
Kind of.
You know, something like an Evangelion or a Eureka 7?
More like Evangelion,
okay.
I guess, but it's not so much focused on the mechs.
Yeah.
And on the combat. The war is definitely happening, and that is a part of that, but it's like it's more focusing on the morality of what's going on.
Okay.
Is what I take away from it, which is nice. It's good to see that. I happen to like big patches of gray area.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Like, I haven't heard of a lot of shows like about that.
Yeah, the movie, I only saw the first, like, three parts of the movie, but it's good. It follows the manga pretty well, or the other way around. I think the manga came first.
Okay.
But yeah, they're both good. Both very good. The manga, I'm not sure if it's still releasing right now. If it is, it releases slowly, but there's plenty of headway if you wanted to catch up.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've actually seen all of it, and it is really good. The only thing I kind of didn't like about the collection was that the backgrounds don't exactly match the foreground animation. They're kind of drawn very differently.
Yeah. But a lot of it's, I mean, a lot of it is, like, either city or wasteland. Is it not?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be... that could be a reason, but, I mean, I don't pretend to be an art critic in for anime and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't really pay attention to that a whole lot. Besides,
okay.
Unless it's a major component of the show. Which, I mean, it's okay that you do and everything, Bovey, but
I'm not judging.
It's
the only real issue I saw. There wasn't really many others. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a really good show, and there's this sort of romance between Rygart and the Queen.
That can only go well.
I mean, it's an interesting dynamic because, like, the king knows what's going on, and he, in fact, is basically the only reason that she ended up with him is because Rygard had left when he did, and there's just the whole thing, and he sort of goes, hey, he takes a interesting position on it, and it's a little hard to explain. You just kind of need to look at it, really, or watch it or read it, however you wish to view the material.
Okay.
All right. So, next I have Nisekoi, which is fairly new. I read the one shot that it's based on ages ago, and it just started into serialization, I think, just around New Year's. But basically, our main character, Ichijo Raku, is absolutely brilliant. He's a trade honor student, perfect grades, outstanding conduct. He's very polite, very well kept, you know.
Plus he's a square.
The ideal person. I guess. The ideal student, I should say.
Yeah.
Right. The rest of his family, on the other hand, is a little not so much like that. Because he just happens to be the firstborn son of the major Yakuza boss in the town, in the city.
And wacky hijinks ensue.
And so, while everybody expects him to take over the family business, as it were, after his father stops, he just aims to get a solid... He just wants a solid position in the government. Basically, that's all he's aiming for. And with this... And all of a sudden, there's this turmoil of a new gang trying to move in on their territory. And... But luckily, his father has come up with a brand new plan to avert all-out war between the two gangs. He just happens to be old friends with the boss of this new gang.
So he's going to force his son to marry your daughter?
Pretty much.
Okay. So it's a mob story.
Yeah. And should they, you know, and should they happen to be dating, nobody would be able to fight. You know, unfortunately, they don't get along.
Of course
Wacky.
They don't. Buon appétit, buon appétit.
Yeah, and there's a... So, and it is, it's very well done. It has an interesting side story about a promise he made with a young girl 10 years back, and, you know, there are... You need to wonder if it's, you know, whether it's the girl who he's being forced into dating anyway, or somebody else, or, you know, they drop a little hint. I mean, I will admit they reveal who it actually is pretty early in the manga. But then, you know, feelings actually start developing between the two, and there's an interesting little dynamic, a love triangle, if you will.
Cool.
That goes on there. But yeah, it's the one shot takes a bit of a vast, is actually quite a bit different. It's still very good. I encourage you to read both.
Okay.
If you're going to, but yeah, it takes a bit different. What they ended up doing in the manga is they split up the old childhood friend from in the one shot into two people, essentially. So there's like old childhood friend and then
new lady.
Mom boss. Yeah, new girl.
So yeah, nice lady.
Pretty much, yeah. Except he's not really nerdy at all. And you know, he's horrible in a fight and so on and so forth. You know, typical...
typical
not
nerd
fitting,
stuff.
Yeah, not fitting in with his family dynamic kind of manga. But it's very funny. I've enjoyed it so far. And I highly recommend people check it out.
Okay. So, we should probably actually talk about these things more.
I was actually going to go off on a really quick tangent.
Okay.
Just because you mentioned that this is based on a one-shot, is that Bleach is actually based on a one-shot.
So is One Piece.
And I don't know if you guys have read the one-shot, but it is vastly different.
No, I haven't actually read the one-shot.
I haven't either.
Never even heard of the one-shot.
Well, yeah, there's this book of character profiles, and it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that for Christmas a while ago, so I've read it. And it's really funny, because when Rukia hands over her powers to Ichigo, or she loses her powers, I forget for what reason, she shrinks. So she's tiny.
Oh, I would like that a lot better if it would happen in the actual manga.
Yeah, and Orihime, like, dies.
Oh. Okay. That got dark.
Yeah, you know, it's got Rukia bathing in a teacup and being silly and being really small, and Orihime dying.
Oh, wow, yeah. The One Piece one is nothing like that. It was just like, it was essentially just Luffy and Nami hanging out for a while. Like, Luffy was just explaining, I want to be the king of pirates. And, like, he also got into this really weird thing of how there were two different brands of pirates. They were, like, the peacemen who were, like, the adventuring types who just want to go from island to island having amazing adventures. And then there's the Morrigan who are, like, the pirates everyone knows. Like, you know, the rape, pillage, and plunder guys. And so it was kind of just Luffy and Nami just kind of sitting on a boat talking for, like, 10 pages. It was weird. Well, yeah, anyway. Punch, what else have you been reading and watching?
Alright. Now, I think the second season's DVD was just released for this show. That's kind of what got me back into it. But I've recently been rewatching Arakawa Under the Bridge. Okay. If either of you are familiar.
You've mentioned this to me before, many times, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure about many. I've probably mentioned it at least once.
Mm-hmm.
But semantics. Basically, Kō Ichinomiya is the heir to a very big corporation called the Ichinomiya Corporation. You know, family business and what for.
Is it evil?
Is
it evil?
The corporation ends up taking very little to do with anything. It's kind of just a setup. He's an heir to a major corporation. He's got his life basically planned out for him, is the gist. But he's made it his life's mission to never owe anybody anything. Like, pay it back immediately, or don't ever have favors done for him, I think is how he goes about it, for the most part. And one day, he has a run-in with some crazy kids who take off his pants and hang them on a bridge.
So wait, they just run up on him and take his pants?
That is basically the setup. Yeah.
How does that play? Is he like, just like knock him down and then take off his pants, or they just like walk by and rip his pants off of him while he's still standing there?
I don't think the little sequence is ever really fleshed out.
It's just,
you see a small scene, there's kids around him, he's kind of falling over, and his pants come off. And then they go back to him standing on the bridge contemplating how he'll get his pants down. But, and so, as he attempts to climb up to the top of this bridge to get his pants down, he falls off into the river below, and the bridge breaks. The beam he's climbing up actually breaks and falls into the river with him on it. So the beam's on top of him, he's drowning in the river, yada yada yada, and doesn't have any pants either. just to make it worse.
It's like, oh, I'm dying this horrible, painful death, I don't have any pants on.
Basically, the whole arson, murder, and jaywalking. And he's saved by Nino, a homeless girl who just so happens to live under the bridge. Now, not wanting to have a debt to her looming over his head for the rest of his life. At this point, he doesn't know she's homeless. But he says, hey, what can I do for you for saving my life? And Nina, as it turns out, Nina wants nothing more than a boyfriend. So...
well, this can only go well.
He ends up... So they end up living together under the bridge in this homeless community. And he gets a brand new name, Recruit. Or Rick, for short. And... oh, right, yes. And the mayor of this little community is a Kappa.
Of course he is.
There's a cross-dressing, gun-toting nun. And a man with a star-shaped head named Hoshi, among other things.
God, this sounds amazing. I have not read this before.
And also Nino believes she's a Venusian princess.
Okay. So she's,
or at least from Venus.
So she's a Scientologist.
Not in so many words.
Yes, just but more.
Basically, it's just... I really enjoy this because, frankly, it's one of the few series where the straight man, so to speak,
yeah,
in this case Recruit, is almost as crazy as the rest of them.
Yeah, it sounds fucking bananas.
Like, just his absolute fanatical dedication to not owing anybody anything. It's just he will do anything to prevent people from doing favors for him.
Wow.
Literally everything. Anything. And there's this one sequence in the first episode where, I mean, this is a family mantra, basically. And when he was, I think it was when he was like 6 or something, his father basically forced him to take care of him as if his father were a young child. To pay him back for the care he gave to him when he was a child.
What? What the fuck is wrong with that guy?
You know, baby clothings and rattles and everything. It's a little short little blurb, but...
yeah.
The one bone to pick I have is that it's segmented into a bunch of little... I think there's like 3 episodes in each full episode, basically. Which kind of breaks up a lot of the action a little bit, because they showed a new little title screen every bit. The anime might have...
well, hello? Hello? Fuck's sake.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
You seem to have lost call. Oh, God.
It's always fucking happens.
Oh, no.
Good Lord.
Technical difficulties!
This is what I get for recording in the middle of a hailstorm.
Oh, it's hailing where you are?
Yep.
Lol.
Dead man, you're fired. I'm the boss now.
Fuck you!
But yeah.
Besides, funny. Besides, having you as the boss wouldn't fix my internet.
No, but it would make me feel better.
Well, too damn bad. You're stuck at the second in command. If you only get to take command when I go insane.
Deal.
Okay, so, yeah. Something under the bridge. It's awesome. Moving on.
Arakawa under the bridge.
Arakawa under the bridge.
There. Just take note of it. Everybody.
All 7 of you out there.
Yes.
Okay. So, what else?
Oh, that's all I have right now. I've been a little sick, so I haven't really had time to really get things down, and that's all I can remember right now. So okay. I'll pass it off.
Okay, so, Bubby, what have you been watching and reading?
All right, well, mostly watching. So number one that I want to talk about, other than my regulars, is Fairy Tail, their third OVA.
Okay.
Has recently been released. It's a good one. It involves time travel.
Of course it does. Do they go to the Old West to find Doc Brown?
No, they go back into their own past.
Oh, okay.
And they paradox the shit out of everything.
So it's like that one episode of Family Guy.
I don't recall that episode.
Yeah, Brian wants to find his old tennis ball that he buried in the backyard, so he and Stewie go back to the first episode of the show.
I see. But no, this goes even further back to when Natsu, Gray, and Anderza were kids. So there's a couple of really notable things in this. Number one is Erza has this memory of being the elder and telling Natsu and Gray to get up, fight, stand up for themselves. But really, when they go back and watch that happen again, she's like beating the crap out of them while doing this. Stand up, fight!
But I don't want to, you're getting me down!
And Natsu's just like, this seems completely different!
wow.
And it actually explains how Natsu got the scar on his neck. Basically, he gave it to himself.
Okay, how does that work?
Okay, so basically, the entire reason they went back in time was because they accidentally activated this book that takes you back to a moment you don't want to remember if you're thinking about it. And Lucy asked him about his scar, and Natsu's, you know, thinking of, oh my god, that horrifying person who came up to me that day I got this scar. And so they went back in time to that. Mm-hmm. And anyways, so he's sitting there watching himself and Gray as kids. He and Gray are fighting both versions. So, like, the kid Natsu and Gray are fighting, and then Natsu and Gray are like, oh yeah, I remember, I won this fight. No, I won this fight. So they start beating the shit out of each other. Like, I won, I won, I won, I won. So anyways, after that's over and they've both been knocked unconscious, Natsu watches and he sees that he did in fact lose when he was a kid. And so he runs up to his child self and starts shaking him and being like, what are you doing? You can't lose to Gray. You have to go and fight him. Go fight Gray. You can't lose. Right. His face was like covered in swelling and bruises and shit because Gray had just beaten the shit out of him. And he was in a disguise, so he looked nothing like himself, but he was acting like a maniac like he normally does. And then basically Natsu gets the scar because kid Natsu tries to attack adult Natsu with Iron Fist of the Fire Dragon, but adult Natsu just kind of blocks it like it's nothing, and then it goes back and hits him on the neck, giving him the scar. And that was apparently the most frightening day of Natsu's life.
Wow.
When he met his adult self.
Wow, dude.
Other paradoxes that happened. Gray did not cause any. Happy did not cause any. Erza convinced her child self, well, not really convinced, just sort of suggested, oh, you're going to apologize to Natsu and Gray now, aren't you? And kid Erza's like, what? No, I'm not going to apologize. Walks away. Erza's like, I know she's going to apologize. And Lucy saves her own life.
Wait, so are these like, did they have memories of something like this happening and then they caused it to happen? Or did they have like, oh, I remember this happening, and then they rewrite history?
I'm guessing that it's sort of a loop thing, like it already happened and then they caused it to happen by going back in time. For example, the thing that causes Lucy to want to join Fairy Tail is her memory of being saved by a Fairy Tail mage whose face she didn't see. Well, that was her.
Yeah, so temporal causality then. Like, Lucy goes back in time to save herself so she can grow up to come back in time and save herself.
Yes.
Time travel, ladies and gentlemen.
That's how it works.
See, I guess they don't technically cause any paradoxes.
Yeah, they just make sure they just make sure history plays out the way it should.
Because technically a paradox would end the universe.
Yeah.
By definition.
Unless you have a paradox machine.
Yeah, it's like a paradox to go back in time and end up causing that kills one of them.
But yeah, after they come back to the future, even Natsu's trying to think through all the time travel. And it's like, Natsu, stop thinking about it. You'll never get anywhere.
Yeah, so that sounds fun. Like, it's interesting when an anime does time travel.
It is a really entertaining OVA. And one thing I will say, unlike the other OVAs, it didn't focus so much on the fan service.
Oh.
Which I like that.
Okay. So what else you got?
Alright, the other thing I'm going to talk about for a while, because it's an entire series, Bento.
Okay.
Oh, I know, yeah. I talked about it when I watched the first episode, but I'm going to talk about it completely fresh now, as if I haven't said anything about it ever before.
Well, good, because I don't remember anything you said about it before.
Okay, so this is basically...
It's a gritty reimagining of his thoughts on Bento.
Yes.
Are you covered in dirt, Bobby?
No.
Do you have an emo fringe?
No.
This isn't a creepy reboot. We are scrapping this whole project.
Anyways, Bento is... it's basically an anime about a fight club. Although it's not a well-established club, they fight over half-price bento.
Oh, yeah, I remember this
now. I'm going to refer to all their characters by their nom de guerre. Because it's easier than remembering their actual names. So our main character, he doesn't have this name right at the beginning, but he later earns the nom de guerre, Hentai. Pervert.
Of course.
So yes, we start off focusing on Pervert. Basically, he can't remember what's happened. All he knows is he's been beaten up, he's in the grocery store... And then he comes back the next day, and it happens again, only this time he wakes up in the back room with the guy from the store being like, "Oh, I can see you're just a dog right now. Well, there's some real wolves out there, so you better learn to fight or you're not going to survive." And he's like, "What? What's going on?" And then suddenly he remembers that the previous night what happened is as soon as he went for the half-price bento, he got his ass kicked by the Ice Witch. Who is our other lead character. And then at the end of that episode, he's invited to come and join the half-price food lovers club. And by invited, I really mean forced. The Ice Witch, who is currently the only member, has him and another girl who doesn't really have a nom de guerre. The best one is the Muscle Cop, which is actually the name that she gives to the main character of her homoerotic novel. The main character being based off of Pervert.
What the fuck? What the fuck is happening?
Yeah,
just wait till you get to the girl's friend.
Oh god, yeah.
The psycho lesbian.
Psycho lesbian.
What's her name, Ume?
I can't remember her actual name, or
I
even
think
her
name is
known to Gare, but even it.
She doesn't have one.
She's not
involved. No. I think her name is Ume. So... But,
I have to watch this.
Yeah, all throughout the first episode, the main character doesn't know why, but this girl, Ume, is coming up to him and just slapping the crap out of him. And she'll be, like, beating him, and she'll be like, "May I hit you?" after she's already beat the shit out of him.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he and the Muscle Cop are literally forced to sign up for this club. So basically, they learn the rules. The rules of the half price fight club, although it's not really a club exactly. They're part of a club that fights along with it. But the rules of half-price bento. Rule number one, you don't talk about half-price bento. Rule number two, you do not... I'm kidding, but I'm... Rule number one is you do not make a move while the God of Discounts is present. The God of Discounts would be the employee who puts the discount sticker on the bento. Rule number two is you only take what you need. So you only take one bento. Rule number three is you don't attack anyone who already has their bento. Simple rules. Other than that, beat the living hell out of each other.
That must be a mess to clean up afterwards. Just blood and teeth everywhere. It's like, maybe we should stop putting stickers on these bento.
Oh, it's ridiculous, but the store employees all love it.
It's like, I got 10 bucks on the Ice Queen.
I would put way more than 10 bucks on the Ice Queen.
It's your first time. You know, it's your first time there. You don't know what's going on. It's like, I just put 10 bucks. Then you come the next day. I'll put 2,000 bucks in the Ice Queen. You get a lot of money as a bookie running the books for that for that price Fight Club.
Anyways, as we find out, Ume, this girl who's beating the crap out of the main character, is Muscle Cop's friend to a creepy extent. She's like a very, very assertive lesbian. She doesn't care what your sexual orientation is either. She will beat you, drag you into a bath, and then hop into the bath with you, or stuff like that. Okay. Basically, any excuse she can find to be naked and right next to another female, she will do that. And she's, like I said, exceptionally assertive. And she really hates the main character for no really good reason other than her friend seems to like him. So she's jealous. And then later we get introduced to someone who is creepily introduced as the main character's cousin. The Beauty by the Lake is her name in the fighting rings. So she's also a half-price bento fighter. She goes to another school, and she also tends to be the main character at Virtual Fighter 4, which is a game they play a lot.
Virtual Fighter?
Yeah, he has a Sega... I think it's a Sega Master System?
Yeah, I think so.
I have no idea. It's an old system.
Virtual Fighter 4. Yeah, because I think the Virtual Fighter 5 came out in, like, the PS2. Oh, well.
I know it's definitely not a Genesis, so I think it's a Master System.
Yes.
But anyways...
Sick of those with Nintendo.
There's an odd sort of romance going on between the two, which is odd because he introduces her as his cousin.
Yeah, but that's Japan.
And as it is Japan, I believe they're a little more loose with their familial labels. Like,
yeah,
they don't do the whole second, third, fourth, fifth cousin thing. It's just,
I figured it was,
you're
something
somewhat related to me, you're my cousin.
I figured
you're not
it was
my sister or my father or my aunt or uncle. You're my cousin, basically.
Yeah, I figured it was something similar to that. But yeah, she's like constantly trying to almost seduce him, but is more toying with him. She'll get him to take bets by offering to let him touch her breasts. Basically, she totally manipulates him with sex, although never actually offering sex. And then so they find out that she's a fighter, and she kind of joins them / is constantly fighting with the Ice Queen because she's not a member of their club. So that's the basic setting of the story. Basically, they just keep coming across challenges within this half-price bento fighting, and they overcome them. There are a couple of little sort of side storylines, though. For example, there's this one girl. I can't remember her name, but she's one of those characters who is older but looks younger. And she has really bad luck. And to explain this further, she has such bad luck that if you touch her and then you touch a good luck charm, it will turn black.
Ah, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Like,
simply walking by someone is endangering their life. Like, shit just gets destroyed all around her. Although, for having such bad luck, she seems to have sort of good luck in a couple ways. One, she's not dead yet.
Yeah, two, she seems to be immune to her own. Like, a lot of bad crap happens to her. She's very clumsy and stuff. I think she's fallen out of windows multiple times. Like, third-story windows and whatever. But she's completely unharmed. So she seems to be immune to her own bad luck. She just causes it for everybody she comes in contact with.
Yeah, and like, she'll be sent to the vending machine to get coffee, and it'll suddenly start spewing out a bunch of free Coke, but then every one of the Cokes will explode in her face. She's exceptionally optimistic, so all of this seems like a good thing to her. No matter what.
Good lord. So, how does falling out of a third-story window repeatedly translate to, this is a good thing?
She sees it as a good start to the day. She's outside with fresh air.
Good lord.
It's not always exactly that, but, you know, she finds some way to put a positive spin on it. And I think she's part of the student council. Which is another sort of character on its own. But, if I remember correctly, I haven't watched it for a while. It kind of fell off with me for some reason. I just stopped watching it. But anyway.
There's only 12 episodes to it, so it doesn't take long to watch through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, other side storylines. You've, of course, got the love triangle. You've got the crazy lesbian one. And there's this whole thing between the two main schools that we see. Where they're constantly trying to sort of publicly embarrass each other yet keep good relations.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the politics, kind of.
Yes, thing. The politics between the two schools.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, most of the time, crap happens because the main character and the beauty by the lake are doing things at each other's schools that are later used for blackmail. Like, one was totally not the pervert's fault. See, he went onto school grounds with permission to visit his cousin, the beauty by the lake, and the security guard just decided that he really likes the beauty by the lake, so he didn't want to let him near him. So he took all of his clothes and tried to shove something up his ass. It was apparently a battery, while repeatedly saying, "I'll shove it into you, I'll shove it into you."
Both the series you talked about now have had men losing clothing. That's a point.
Sorry, which?
Oh no, I was thinking of Pledgetron's one. Out of the bridge.
Men aren't losing... Well, I guess in the fairy tale OVA, it all starts with Nats losing his muffler.
Yeah, so I guess all your series are sexy.
And then, the beauty by the lake, like, went to the pervert school and was, like, sexually harassing one girl who has the creepy lesbian friend, which then caused her to be sexually harassed by the creepy lesbian friend.
Wow.
Sexually harassed with a vengeance.
Wow. Yeah, that's Bento. It's weird, but it is fun to watch.
It and sounds like it.
The fight scenes are animated really well.
Okay. So I definitely have to fucking check that one out. So, anything else you got, Bobby?
Mostly just my regular stuff, and there's not a whole lot new going on with that, except Anonatsu, I guess, one of the romances in the big sort of triangle thing got finally reconciled. The main character, what's-his-face, Glasses, and the alien girl. I'm not going to remember. Stop whispering these things in my ear. Sorry, I'm just a little bit insane. You'll have to forgive me.
Stop whispering in my ear.
Damn it, Reagan, fuck off.
So, right, what's her name? Ichika. The alien has now told the rest of the group that, yeah, I'm an alien. And she and the main character, Kaito, I guess it is, have gotten together now.
Aw, yeah.
And Remon was filming the whole time.
Yeah, I've missed the last three episodes, I think. Have they ever showed what Lemon is up to?
No, she just kind of continues being a shit disturber.
She just somehow knows everything with no explanation.
Yeah, she at one point jokingly says that she's in the Men in Black, and they're like, stop joking like that. And I'm wondering, is it a joke? Is she shit disturbing? Is this serious? I don't know.
But yeah, basically, this character. This is for Dead Man, I guess, because she's never...
Yeah, Bobby's already explained her to me. She kind of just essentially Isaiah.
Yeah, but it's like, when they're making this movie, she comes up with the script and everything. And it's like, word for word, exactly.
Yeah, he explained it to me.
We talked about this last week.
Okay.
Yeah, when you were off...
Well, I wasn't there.
Yeah, when you were off having something.
Having free time...
Having the horrible, horrible death.
Yeah, there's that too.
Seems like you still have it.
Yeah, I'm in the recovery phases.
Okay, so... Yeah, Bowie, so anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so. Well, I guess Fairy Tale Xerath has just sort of revealed that, hey, I'm going to be active in this era now. Everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Okay, so I guess on to me. So, for my series, I have one that I've talked about before and three that I haven't. So, let's start with the one I've talked about before, Legend of Mayan, Volume 12.
So,
So I talked about this before. It was the one with, like, they were living in that weird fantasy world. Where there was like a bunch of magical people, and there was the main character who all of a sudden became part of like this weird ancient race of people who have like uncontrollable Hulk rage inside them. And so it turns out that might be artificial, like someone might have put that inside of him.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a cool explanation. And finally, Felicia and Felix actually meet up, because that is something I've been looking forward to, because before Volume 11, Felicia and Felix were actually, like, they were in love. They actually had sex once. But then Felicia supposedly died, and then it goes forward 7 years, and Felix is Devil Shoe, and then Felicia is tanned and working for the enemy. And she also had a baby. So there's
a
that.
A baby.
A baby.
She had a baby.
I want to eat your baby. Yeah, so she had a baby, and now that was handed off to one of the bad guys, like court maidens or something. And so right now they are just kind of starting their big fight. This is going to be this big climactic battle between Felix and Felicia, where Felix is going to try to reawaken the memories that's locked deep inside her head, and she's just going to try to kill him. But he uses his eyes to open the sky. So there's that. Yeah, like. Felix is the like long lost descendant, is like the ancient descendant of Mayan the Brave, who's like this greatest hero ever. He had these things called blood finds, which were like his eyes would turn red and all of a sudden become the greatest warrior ever. And so Felix has the blood finds as well, which gives him like amazing sword techniques. But it also gives him, I guess, magic, which is something we have not seen before, because you know, he activates blood finds, and then he summons a demon from his sword, and then opens the sky.
Oh yeah, makes sense.
So that's awesome. Yeah, I seriously cannot recommend Legend of Mana enough. It is a fantastic series. It is funny. It is great. It's really good action. It's got really decent art. It's got tits. So there's that. And not just any tits, Korean tits.
You really like your Korean tits, don't you?
They are pretty good tits. I just say, like, all the Korean series I read, they're all kind of eshy. They all just have, like, these dudes who, these kind of like regular dudes with, who you're usually hang around with, like, women with huge tits. And seriously, like, Freezing, that is like every single woman in that show, just every one of them is stacked. And in Onohime Versus, we got tits on them, except for like the little one, because that would be weird. In Inflame Inferno, we got tits in there. We got, like I said, this one. And it's like, they're just kind of out there. Like, Felicia kind of has the same dressing sensibilities as Emma Frost from X-Men. Or just wear as little fabric and as much fur as possible. So her clothing essentially just like covers her sides and like the bottom quarter of her breasts. And she just wears fur around her neck with a cape.
So she's practically invincible then.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because that's the rule.
Yeah. With men, the more armor they wear, the more powerful they are. And with women, the less armor they wear, the more powerful they are.
Well, unless they're He-Man.
Yeah, so if they run into a woman nudist, they better run.
Yeah, she's, like, completely unkillable.
Yeah, she is, like, she is a god, I'm guessing.
Unless she gets some clothes on.
Yes, like, she's, like, running, trying to chase him down, then she just, like, runs through a clothing line, and, like, a blanket gets wrapped around her, and is like, quick, take her now! Okay. Well, yeah, so, Legend of Mine is so good. Moving on to Dendrobates. So I just read this series today, like, not an hour ago. Well, a little over an hour ago, because that we started recording a few long. Yeah, so, not 2 hours ago. And it is really good. So it's about this cop. His name's Sengawa. He is an accountant for the police department, so he essentially is just in charge of doing paperwork, like discharging witnesses and stuff, and packaging evidence. But he has a secret identity. He is secretly the hitman known as the Man with a Thousand Guns. So every night, so like end of the day, he's just like this really milquetoast guy. He just has like slick down hair, regular glasses, just wear a suit and tie, this real salary man looking guy. But then at night, he throws his hair back, he takes off his glasses, and then he gets awesome like leather jackets and shit, and then uses guns that he took from the evidence locker to go around and shoot people for other people. He's kind of an avenging angel kind of person. Like, since he works for the police department, he finds people who have been wronged by someone, and then like says like, I can help you get revenge, but I won't do it for free. And then they get the money. He goes off, kills them, and then usually gives the gun to the people who hired him. Like the first case he takes, there's like a bunch of guys in a breath in like a warehouse doing a drug deal. And then he comes in and just literally kills everyone in the room with two handguns. There are like 20 people. He's one guy, just takes them all out. And then at the end of it, he goes back to the people who hired him. He gives the guy a gun, and his wife just literally died in his arms because he hadn't eaten since his daughter died after overdosing on drugs. And then goes home and shoots himself with that gun. So it is a little bit depressing, but those bits are few and far between. Everything else is either awesome action or just kind of funny, just kind of comedy stuff of Sengawa being really incompetent at his job, but then it's like everyone else is like yelling at him and shit. Like there's this one bit at the beginning when you first introduced to Sengawa and not the Man with a Thousand Guns. He's checking out a bunch of porn videos from the evidence locker. And then this partner comes in and he's like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, the chief asked me to sign these out for him. Something about bribes. And his partner is constantly yelling at him, tearing him down for everything he does. Even though he could literally kill her with his hands high behind his back.
Yeah, when you first brought that up, it was kind of reminded me of another series that I read a while ago. I'd have to look into it again, really. But it's called Mouse.
Mouse. That sounds familiar.
It's sort of a similar thing, except he's not a hitman. He's a thief. He's a master thief. And he's not really anything to do with the police, but he's an art teacher.
Well, yeah, so he is... Okay, so I've lost my train of thought here, but... Yeah, like, when he's in, like, assassin mode, he's fucking badass. Like, there's this one guy who is, like, in one of the things, the third chapter. There are only 9 chapters out. They just finished the first volume with chapter 8, so it's really early on. You can still catch up with it. I'm not sure about a release schedule for it. But yeah, so, third chapter, he's going after a martial artist who's, like, the king of karate. Who's the king of karate. He beat 2 homeless guys to death, and so he goes to try to find him and hunt him down. And this guy, so what he does is, the king of karate just goes and gives, like, the hardest punch he can to this guy, tries to punch him as hard as he can, and, like, Sangawa just blocks him with his forehead. It's like, boom, you see the shock go out, and the guy's like, oh god, what the fuck's happening? And it's like, really? They call you the king of karate? And he just, like, shoots his arm off or something? And yeah, when he is in assassin mode, he is fucking brutal. When he is in Sangawa mode, he is really hilarious. And when he is in between, he's actually kind of cool, because there's this one bit where a girl walks up to him, like, they just found, like, a bunch of tapes of sex stuff, like, rape tapes that they found, like snuff films. And so the girl walks up to him and his partner outside and starts talking. It's like, did you find all those videotapes? And all of a sudden she starts bleeding out from between her legs and, like, passes out because she had a miscarriage from a rape baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. So then he goes to the hospital to see the parents. He talks to the daughters, like, who's in a coma up to this point. She's like, erase me, that was her last wish to me. And she, like, wakes up a bit. And then he just kind of makes the transition between being Sangawa and being Man with 1,000 Guns. He just, like, takes off the glasses, like, I can get your revenge for you, but I won't do it for free. That's kind of his line. And it's a really good series. It's got, like I said, great action, pretty funny. And I actually really like this guy as a character. He is really interesting to me. He kind of reminds me of Dexter in a way. Of using what resources he has available to him through the police department to, like, do this entire thing, because all the guns he uses, he takes from evidence. And since he's the guy who was in charge of all the evidence, he's able to work it around so that no one will know they're gone. He has this big vault that is just full of all the evidence and stuff, and so he just uses that vault to take all his guns from there. It is good. I kind of recommend the series enough. Okay, moving on. So I just found out about this series because it's gonna be relevant to the news we're gonna talk about later. But I tried to watch the first episode of Man U Heiken Show. Now I say tried because this is a series about tits. Again,
literally.
I looked it up and I'm pretty sure that, like, the English.